This is The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. Newcastle get to their first major final since 1999. One of their own scores twice. Just a beautiful story, whichever way you look at it, apart from that bit that barely anyone talks about anymore. We'll try to balance out the understandable joy for the Geordies with the wider implications of it all. There are some FA Cup games that no one's noticed, and then it's on to the transfer window. Chelsea break the British record for Enzo Fernandez, a man I'd wager Barry couldn't pick out of a lineup 2 months ago, or perhaps even today. Will their huge recent investment pay off? Is Jorginho another canny Arteta signing? Cancelo's off to Bayern and Spurs wingbacks arrive, go on loan or get terminated? Also today, Sean Dyche's hats, a little more Subaru, your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. Jonathan says, a Football Weekly lineup for the discerning gentleman. Barry Glendenning, welcome. If I've done you a disservice in the intro, I apologise.
I would be able to pick Enzo Fernandez out of a lineup today. I probably wouldn't have been able to. No, I definitely wouldn't have been able to 2 months ago. There are quite a few signings made by Premier League clubs who I definitely wouldn't be able to pick out of lineups. So hopefully they haven't committed any wrongdoing. I hope none of them have stolen your car.
Robin Cowan, hello.
Hi, Max. I have a question, actually. Could you pick him out of a lineup, Barry, if, say, he was wearing like a, I don't know, like let's go for, like, if he was dressed like as waiter or something, would you be able to pick him out? Would you say, oh, that's Enzo Fernandez?
I would, yes. I mean, I've met quite a few footballers in TalkSport Towers where, because they're not wearing, you know, say Darren Ambrose, because he doesn't walk in wearing Crystal Palace kit, I have no idea who he is until someone goes, that's Darren Ambrose.
James says, seeing Lars in the starting lineup is my single favourite thing. I get the same warm, fuzzy feeling I get when watching Tom Kearney elegantly dominate the midfield for Fulham. Pure class. Welcome, Lars Sivertsen.
That's very kind of that man. Thank you very much. Hello, good morning.
You did oversleep.
I did.
But you are forgiven.
Thank you.
Anyway, let's get on with the football that happened before the transfers. I hope that's the right order for listeners. I know some people love the transfer window, but Newcastle beating Southampton 2-1. I mean, the atmosphere at St James's Park, Barry, and the fans, it was pretty incredible there, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it has been sort of relentlessly since they started getting good under Eddie Howe. They have these elaborate banners and tifos and whatnot. And the fans are obviously very excited because their team is doing exceptionally well. And I'm very pleased for them because they've now emulated the Sunderland team of 2014 by getting to Wembley for a League Cup final where they will almost certainly face opposition from Manchester.
Sean Longstaff, arriving late, Robin, Lampard style. I mean, the second goal was a wonderful move as well. I sort of wonder, is he in England contention now? I mean, he seems to be playing incredibly well. I mean, obviously, I don't think he's any good at football, but clearly I'm wrong. Clearly I'm completely wrong. Like, he's playing so well.
Do we need to get him on the plane?
Get him on the plane.
Does he need to get on the plane? Well, you know, he potentially could be playing for a top four team. So, you know, why not? Was it that, I can't remember how many, was it a squad of, I don't know, 500 the preliminary squad, so he'd certainly make that. No, and both goals taken really beautifully. The first one was good, but then, yeah, Ali McCoist, who is also a joy to listen to, but also particularly astute, and he did point out that Armstrong basically didn't even notice, didn't even look at him. So that was quite a bad piece of defending there. But, I mean, Newcastle were just so good, especially in the first half. They were just way, way better than Southampton. They made things look easy, you know, playing fantastic front foot football and just overpowered Southampton, who I know came back in the second half, but they kind of had to take the initiative because they were down. And it was pretty much over the two legs a cruise for them. I mean, it was similar to the first leg for Manchester United against Nottingham Forest. So do you know what? I don't think it would be, assuming it is going to be Manchester United, that's going to be a difficult one to call, actually.
Yeah, I think so. I just wondered, you know, on that subject of Longstaff and a few other players, Lars, if we need to reconsider how good they are. like Joe Willock, Fabian Scheer, Dan Byrne, all these players that we kind of gone, oh, you're a steady Premier League, 6-7 out of 10 type player, and that's what I've pigeonholed you there.
But it's worth remembering that football is a team sport, yeah? So if the team improves through good coaching and through adding some components that work really well, sometimes we see individual players do much better than before. Like, this is a very much a tale as old as time. And I'm sure there are... Maybe we could reconsider them if we want, but we could also consider that we can look around the Premier League and see there are quite a few players who we might consider bang average, who in the right collective context would do much better.
Hmm. Alex says Newcastle had 4 players tonight that grew up supporting them, Longstaff, Byrne, Anderson and Murphy. What effect does that have on the team? Longstaff mentioned he was emotionally drained after his second goal. Maybe not all positive. It does, you know, it does add to the romance of it, Barry, doesn't it?
Yeah, I suppose it does. Some of those players are guys who have been revitalised by Eddie Howe. You know, the Newcastle team we see now is a mixture of big spending and players who were there but weren't performing particularly well under Steve Bruce, who've been completely reinvigorated under the new regime. I'm not sure if it makes a huge amount of difference whether they support the club or not. I suppose it gives some sort of connection with the fans, but they were... Whoever is playing and whoever they support, they're going to be trying to get to the final.
Yes, no, it's a very good point. So perhaps it doesn't matter at all. I mean, that is their job after all, you know, and they're sort of elite sportsmen. But it feels kind of pleasant when you hear some Geordies saying, oh, you know, I was in the Gallagher end when I was a wee lad, etc., etc. I mean, you mentioned Adam Armstrong there, Robin. He didn't track Sean Longstaff, and then he missed that huge chance. I sort of quite like him as a player, and sort of scuttles about a bit, doesn't he? But that was a huge chance as well, and I sort of think he had to go round Nick Pope probably.
Well, maybe, yeah. I mean, Nick Pope is quite an imposing figure, and he's had a fantastic season. It was a good save. It just that transfer just hasn't seemed to have worked out. I really would like it to. He was banging them in for Blackburn, and then you think, oh, this is a good move up to a Premier League team who need goals, but. Yeah, I think he's maybe scored, is it 2 or 3 in the Premier League in sort of a couple of seasons? And yeah, it's a tricky one. But I mean, it was Shea Adams' goal was good, wasn't it, Barry? Mm. I need to say Barry's name. And I would add to what Barry said, I think you're absolutely right that he's definitely, anyhow, it's certainly improved, unquestionably improved the players that were there. But just a few, couple of additions, I think in particular, Guimaraes, who just he knits everything together. He was involved in both goals and then, yeah, looked very upset when he was sent off, obviously.
He probably thought he was getting banned from the final, didn't he? I mean, I think everybody thought that, and it doesn't. He gets a 3-match ban now, but will be available. Lars, you had your hand raised.
Yeah, no, we've given Eddie Howe and the homegrown lads sort of due credit, but I mean, you mentioned the sort of lack of finishing finesse for Southampton. I mean, their striker partnership of Armstrong and Adams together cost about, I think they cost 15 million each. Whereas, you know, when Alexander Isak comes on, they've got Isak and Joelinton who together cost over 100 million. So like, there is a bit of a difference in investment here as well. And that is part of the recipe. I mean, we can't like ignore that, I think, completely.
Do you, Lars, do you agree, Robin? I think, you know, presuming it is United, Manchester United, this isn't a given that Manchester United win this trophy. This is a really... I don't even know why I'm saying it like that. You know, Newcastle are above them in the table, aren't they?
No, absolutely. Newcastle are, well, they're on the... They have the same number of points in the table, Newcastle, though Newcastle are above them on goal difference, I think. Well, especially with Eriksen getting injured. Now, they have brought in an emergency midfielder who's very good, but we don't really know how he'll fit into the team. I think Eriksen has been a really big part of that team this season. I think he's worked much better in that sort of deep midfield role than most people, myself included, would have expected, and has really been part of why they've looked like so much of a proper team. Casemiro has gotten a lot of the credit, and he deserves that, but Eriksen's been very good as well. So you take him out of the team, that weakens them for sure, and it's very open, I think.
Alan says, should Newcastle win the Carabao Cup? Will it be put on display on Mohammed bin Salman's yacht like Da Vinci's Salvator Mundi painting? Go well next to each other. Restricting access to the third most important domestic cup to the world's super elite. Barry, how do we feel about Newcastle getting to a final?
Well, it was inevitable, and they will presumably get to many more finals, more prestigious finals, and win more prestigious trophies in the coming years because they've got more money than God. Obviously, Newcastle fans have no control over who owns their club, but they do have the opportunity to disapprove of who owns their club, and I suppose many of them do. Many of them also go out of their way to try and defend or excuse their owners' actions, many of those actions which are just disgusting. And that's the kind of thing I don't understand. But you have to again divide or make the distinction between Newcastle Twitter and real-life Newcastle fans. But quite a few Newcastle fans I know in inverted commas real life do go out of their way to try and excuse their owners' actions, whether it's through whataboutery or whatever. And that's the bit I find unpalatable. You know, it is an exercise in sports washing. I've heard people try to say it's no different to what's going on at Wrexham. It quite clearly is. And to make a comparison like that is ludicrous. But I'm not sure how I feel about them being in final. But it was completely inevitable. As a Sunderland fan, I obviously don't want them to be in finals. But
I think what's interesting, Robin, is actually it seems like people said something, and then it's, you know, when you listen to the, you know, the commentary last night, be on the TV or the radio, and I don't know if that is the right place to talk about these things. And, you know, whenever you bring it up, people say, now's not the time. Let's celebrate the football now. And you sort of think, well, now is the time, and it should come around again for the final. And I know that we're kind of repeating ourselves, and I sort of feel that we should repeat ourselves, even if it doesn't achieve everything. Because like Barry has said before, everyone has kind of made their decision now on where they stand on this. And also, I think you made a good point last time we talked about this, Barry, is that Newcastle fans probably are right to think that Man City fans get not a pass, but get much less stick. But you know, if you were asked to commentate on the Carabao Cup final, how do you get that in? Like, how would you? Would someone tell you weren't allowed to do it, or where do you get it in? Like, you're sitting next to Alan Shearer, you can't just go 20 minutes in a lull in play. Just want to ask you about, you know, Jamal Khashoggi. You can't do
that. Yeah. Well, I think and that's kind of why. Like, that's part of the reason why football clubs are sort of prime for this sort of sports washing thing is that people just get swept up and they don't really think about the sort of bigger picture. I mean, for me personally, Newcastle was a team that I loved as a child. Alan Shearer was my hero, and it really leaves a bit of a bitter taste. I kind of always wanted them to do well. I don't feel like that anymore. And I know Newcastle fans won't like me saying that, but I also think it just feels like you have to be on a side these days, don't you? I think you can forgive fans for continuing to support their team, but also recognising that their owners, you know, are part of something that's really awful in the world. I think, and I'd forgive, you know, it's difficult for a fan who's been supporting their club for ever since they were small to kind of change their mind on that. So I do sympathise, but I think the fact that they're trying to defend something that's totally indefensible doesn't help. It doesn't help in anything. And I think absolutely right. It needs to keep being brought up, even if it is awkward. I think, and I feel for Eddie Howe, because it's a bit like when Antonio Conte, you were discussing this on another pod, saying, why do I keep getting asked about everything? And I think he has a point. And Eddie Howe basically has to bear the brunt of these questions, but he's got to be asked them because there's no one else to ask.
I think I agree with all of that. And I think I sort of agree with you, Robin, as well. I had such... I really loved Newcastle as a club, probably because they weren't hugely successful. It's much more fun to have faith, you know, like see these kind of heroic failures like under Keegan and that kind of stuff and the football they played then. And, it, you know, it does feel different now, but, you know, obviously I'm a neutral in it. Last night in the FA Cup, Blackburn won at Birmingham. I was watching the highlights of this on YouTube and I didn't notice for about... it's only 2.5 minute highlight package I could find. A minute and a half in, it was just... You know, sometimes on YouTube, someone just puts a computer game version of the football match. That's like, why have you? That's really annoying when you've done that. Like, actually, I really, really looked. I couldn't find the goal anywhere, and I couldn't find it on the FA Cup YouTube channel. Right, so like, clearly they didn't notice this game was happening either. Perhaps good news for Austin Trusty, who's not so trusty. Left foot scored an own goal. I mean, I say left foot. I don't know because I haven't seen it. His own goal was the one that put Blackburn through. West Ham won at Derby the day before, Jared Bowen, Mikhail Antonio with the goals. Apparently they played much better than they have recently. So the draw has been made. And Rob says, well, the odds for Leeds, who are away to Fulham or Sunderland, I know you were at that game, Robin, and did that Hugh Grant joke, which we enjoyed.
Your critique of it, yeah. No, I'll try and do better.
Yeah. Anyway. Anyway. No, I can't talk for sure. Rob says, the odds for Leeds to be drawn away in the FA Cup on 12 successive occasions are 4,095-1. Whereas the odds on Micah Richards becoming the new James Bond are a mere 2,500-1. Not a question I know, but that is amazing, isn't it? I obviously had no idea that they constantly...
I'd watch that. I'm just saying, I would go straight to the cinema. I'd watch it many times.
He's in. To be fair, he's in good nick, Micah. Have you seen, I don't know if you've seen his latest Instagram post.
Does he Instagram in the gym? Is that what he's
like, one
does
of them.
Does he do like deadlifts in front of the camera,
definitely,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a shame.
But, you know, to be fair, I mean, if it's an audition, if it's a kind of come and get me plea to the producers of James Bond, then you know what? It's not bad. Not bad at all.
Could Roy Keane be M?
Yeah. Would Keane be M or would Keane be the baddie? I think Sunes would be the baddie, I guess, wouldn't he, in this?
No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
Who was that, though? That
was Roy Keane.
Oh, right. Okay. Yes, I mean, I think he laughs a bit too much to be James. You know,
I think that's right. They need to reinvent themselves. Listen, they've had a very serious Bond now with Daniel Craig, and it's like
it'd be more of the Roger Moore style.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, absolutely.
Less problematic than those films were, hopefully. Yeah. But I think saying Keane should be a baddie is to kind of... I mean, I don't think there's an adversarial relationship between them at all. I think the sort of...
I think you're right.
Keane sort of tutting a bit and being disapproving of his tomfoolery makes it perfect for a sort of James Bond dynamic.
You're right. Yeah. It's very much, I'm taking you off the case. kind of, you know, yeah, you're right. But Southampton play Luton or Grimsby, Leicester play Blackburn or Birmingham, Stoke, Brighton, Wrexham, Sheffield United or Sheffield United v Spurs, Fulham, Sunderland v Leeds, Bristol City, Manchester United, West Ham. And then there'll be one EFL side in for sure, because Ipswich or Burnley play Sheffield Wednesday or Fleetwood. But it seems like all that, it's opening up for someone not in the Premier League. Lots of Premier League sides could, the quarterfinals could look very, very different if there are no giant killings. Anyway, that'll do for part one. Part two, we will discuss the transfer window. Hi Pod fans, Football Weekly is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small town Welsh football club has finally been promoted to League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May the 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Gunnar Matt says, can the panel make predictions on the number of transfers in this window that will only be realised by Barry months from now? let's start with Chelsea then. Enzo Fernandez, it went to the wire, didn't it? You know, Fabrizio Romano and Jim White getting giddily excited somewhere, I presume. 105 million becomes a new British transfer record, surpassing 100 million paid for Jack Grealish. Lars, at the end of June last year, Benfica signed him for €10 million plus €8 million in add-ons. Since then, he's played 17 times them and scored one goal. He had an excellent World Cup. I'm not saying he's a bad footballer, but it seems it seems he's not the player I'd have picked to break the British transfer record.
It's a slightly odd one, yeah. And I keep thinking about, you know, there was a moment, there was a brief moment in the World Cup. It was just against Mexico, really. When you thought Argentina is in trouble here because they'd lost that first game and they weren't playing really well. They weren't playing well at all against Mexico. They were really struggling to create chances. And you were just looking at, they could be in trouble in this group. There's a possibility that they go home early. And if that game doesn't pivot the way it does, do Chelsea sign Enzo Fernandez for 100 or whatever million in this window? I think probably not, which just kind of goes to show how massively irrational the transfer window can be sometimes. I think he's a really good player. The transfer fee confuses me a little bit, but then so do quite a few transfer fees Chelsea have decided to pay since Todd Bowley came in. You get the sense that you have a very inexperienced owner there who's been taken for a ride a few times or since he came in, and you wonder if the same thing could have happened again. But the point is, I think he's good. But this goes for so many Chelsea transfers. I mean, we're going to get into it now. There's so many players they've brought in since Bowley came in. We thought, yeah, that's a good player, but they've paid what? And how does he fit in exactly? These are questions I have a little bit about Enzo Fernandez as well.
He is a little bit, he reminds me of, we've been dragged into watching The Apprentice again. And when they try and negotiate and they kind of go from, okay, well, we'll say that for £10, and the guy goes, "I can't do that." And you know, it's 50. They go, "Okay, £49.99." It's like, yeah, exactly. I mean, it feels to me like he's kind of, pardon this, but you know, like it's kind of a bit of a dick swinging contest with Todd Bowley. Do you know what I mean? It's just madness. It's just,
well, they've spent £540 million. The trouble with The Apprentice is I think you contractually, in a bit in the same way that, you know, the TV directors were contractually obliged to put Gianni Infantino in shot, you are contractually obliged to laugh at whatever Alan Sugar says, even if it's really bad. You know, it's like, come on, the writers have got to do better than that, and he's got to deliver it better than that. This is not, you can't, just because you want the investment, doesn't mean you should titter in the back row of team, you know, Galapagos or whatever you've called yourself this season. They've spent £540 million, Barry. Since Todd Bowley took over, you know, Fofana cost, I've got them in euros, so I mean, it's about the same, isn't it? 80 million. Mudryk, 70 million. Cucurella, 65. Raheem Sterling, 50 million. Benoit Badiashile, 38 million euros. Koulibaly, the same. Noni Madueke, I mean, I've never, has he played? I don't know. 35 million.
Yeah. Interesting case. He's very, I mean, he's born in Barnet, I think. He's played for PSV in a few years and kind of always been flagged up as a really promising player, technically very clever, someone who can go past people. But it's still all potential. You know, he's had some trouble with injuries. This is not all his fault as such, but like in terms of his goal and assist output, he is not a 35 million player out of the. I mean, I've spoke to a friend of mine who you know, follows the Dutch football very closely, and they're kind of like, "We're getting what for him? Like, hang on." And it's another one of those where, like, again, I would not be surprised at all if he became a very, very good winger. But the transfer fee is big.
What about Malo Gusto, Lars? I know not a lot about him.
Yeah, very game, sort of attack-minded fullback, a player who Lyon really, really didn't want to sell. He's very young. He's shown already he can play at a high level. So again, the fee's a little bit on the high side, but again, another player. Listen, I'm scratching my head a little bit, and you're listing them all and the big numbers. There's so many players in this splurge who I'm sure will be good, and I'm sure will be sat here in a few years, and they'll be, you know, brilliant, sort of well-established Premier League players. So if, like, I'm not trying to, like, urinate on anyone's cornflakes this morning, and if I was a Chelsea fan, I would be excited about all these incomings. I would just like to register, like, I am a little bit confused about what the strategy is, and it's also that, if you go on into this window, you look at the Chelsea squad, like, what are the biggest problems? Like, one of the biggest problems is, like, you don't have a proper number nine. You don't really have a striker. They haven't signed that. Like, that's not, of all the things they have signed, that's not one of them. The other big problem is the sort of waning influence of N'Golo Kante, who's not really N'Golo Kante anymore, and is certainly not fit very often. Have you signed, like, the sort of ball-winning, angry man in midfield? Not really. Like, Fernandes played that role at the World Cup, but he's more of a number eight. He's much, you know, at Benfica, certainly, he's better when he gets forward. So the sort of midfield destroyer, even if he is quite aggressive and wins challenges. So you've not really signed that type of player either. So the two biggest sort of things you've not really addressed, but you have signed a lot of players, many of whom are good. So I then it's kind of up to poor old Graham Potter to make sense of all of this. Like, it's a very strange situation.
I just wanted a small point about price tags, because wrongly, as a fan, it's almost, it's like a sliding scale of the more this player costs, the less time they have to impress you and bed in. So I don't think it's actually doing them any favours, and it's not their fault, obviously, these players. It's nothing to do with them, how much Chelsea willing to pay.
But also the more excited you are, like you're just like, wow, he's so shiny. It's like Barry, a sort of deluxe Nottingham Forest, isn't it? Which is the number of players that they've got to, you know, I don't know, aren't some of them going to miss the Champions League squad? They've just got so many.
Yeah, well, they've signed 8 players in the window and they can only register a maximum of 3 for the Champions League squad. So 5 of those are going to miss out. Now, there's no question of anyone being cup tied if you know, say Mikhailo Mudryk played so well for Shakhtar Donetsk in the group stages. He can play for Chelsea if they select him for their squad. One imagines he will be one of the lucky 3. It's weird that Chelsea, after Abramovich left, Chelsea fans were warned to expect this new era of austerity. And they've spent 550 million since Boehly arrived, 330 million in the window that's just closed. That's 37%. Of the entire January spend in the Premier League by one club. So you'd have to say they've, on the face of it, they've had a good window. It could turn out to be an absolute shambles of a window. Only time will tell.
I think that's a really good point, Barry, because we always do this thing the day after deadline day. It's like, who has won the transfer market? I understand that there's a demand for those kind of takes, but we don't know. Like, we really don't for a good while yet. Now, again, looking at some of the names and also the sort of the age profile, as the clever transfer people say, like, there's quite a lot of guys under, predominantly guys under 20, 24, under 25, 24 here. So it is entirely possible that Todd Boehly and Chelsea have kind of set themselves up really well for the next half decade with good players. And of course, the way the accounting works, we've been through all of that. The transfer fees are amortization happening. Of course, that's separate to the actual payment of the money, but in FFP terms, they're going to probably find a way to get around that. I just sort of raise questions of, have they bought the types of players they need to improve right now, is the thing I'm not 100% certain. And if you do miss out on the Champions League, and that's going to be an uphill battle for them, with all this sort of the way the transfers are spread over a long time, you are kind of kicking the can down the road and giving yourself less wiggle room in the future, much less so even if revenues drop because you've missed the transfer mark, you've missed the Champions League. So it's a strange, strange old situation.
Big question, Robin. Have Arsenal won the transfer window is what I'd like to know. I mean, Jorginho comes in. Simon says, thoughts on Jorginho? I've seen almost nothing but negativity from Arsenal fans, but it looks shrewd to me. Experienced winner, plays Arteta's way, provides strength and depth. You still have a few years in the tank. Not every signing has to be an exciting young talent, does it?
No, I think, again, it's going to be one that we'll have to wait and see. Obviously, they wanted Caicedo, who would have been a longer-term option. Jorginho is a good sort of decade older than him. And yeah, he's won everything. And yes, he's technically excellent. So, I mean, on the face of it, it looks like good business. But I was just wondering, that sort of path from Chelsea to Arsenal, it's not great. You know, we had Willian, who is really good for Fulham now, but he had a pretty poor season. Petr Cech, I mean, he was okay, but it was kind of on the wane a little bit. I guess the difference is Arsenal was sort of on the wane during those transfers, like David Luiz and all. But it does seem like Chelsea kind of let their players go to Arsenal after they've hit their peak.
I mean, I suppose fans, Barry, fans are sort of less excited about players they already know, but Trossard and Jorginho are both Premier League ready, and it sort of feels exactly what Arsenal have a very specific sort of cause, which is win the league this year. It just seems very sensible to me.
I think Trossard and Jorginho are very astute signings. Some Arsenal fans I know are hugely underwhelmed, particularly by Jorginho. And Arsenal Twitter went into meltdown yesterday, and the hashtag #EduOut was trending. Edu obviously being their head of recruitment. Now, Arsenal top of the league by 5 points. They have a game in hand. That's with a team assembled by Edu and Mikel Arteta. And I totally appreciate that Arsenal Twitter and, you know, well, I was going to say I totally appreciate that Arsenal Twitter and real-life Arsenal fans are completely different beasts. But having spoken to several Arsenal fans who I know, like, and admire yesterday, I'm not so sure they are, because they were disgusted with the signing of Jorginho. To me, it's a no-brainer. He's going to be an understudy to Granit Xhaka and Thomas Partey. He's a proven winner. he's a very good player. I just don't see why you would be anything other than quite satisfied that they've brought him in.
Yeah, I'm slightly worried about the extra commute for him, because you know, you don't need to move house, right? But if you're in Cobham, which is where all the Chelsea players are, and now you've suddenly got to drive to London Colney, the M25 is unpredictable. You'd have to leave pretty early to be sure of getting to training. Will he be a bit more ratty? Will he just be a bit more, you know, just a bit of pent-up frustration from all that driving? Something to look out for. Anyway, yes, Lars.
The thing I'd like to ask the disgruntled Arsenal fans who are expecting all this money to be spent on all these big players is, which of your current team are you kicking out? Like, because they have a pretty settled 11 who have just put up 50 points in half a season. So you're on track for one of the sort of all-time top Premier League points returns. Which of your 11 are you kicking out? If you're signing Caicedo, that means you're putting Partey or Xhaka on the bench for most of the rest of the season, because you're not spending 70 million on a new midfielder to stick him on the bench. So which of those two magnificently performing parts of this puzzle are you banning? Who are you sending away? If you bring Mudryk, right? Okay, so no more Martinelli then, right? Has he deserved being kicked out of the team? I don't think so. Like, the situation for Arsenal right now is that their team is working so well. They are going to need depth, because not everyone can play every single game in the season. But that's not something you spend like that massive money on, bring someone who's going to expect and demand to start for. That's going to unsettle the thing. I think it makes perfect sense to bring in two guys in Trossard and Jorginho, who knows the Premier League and who knows what's required, and are presumably guys who will come in and not kick off if they spend on a good bit of the next 6 months on the bench.
Hakim Ziyech almost went to PSG. There were reports that he was in the PSG offices, but the transfer didn't go through for some reason or another.
Well, apparently someone at Chelsea filed the wrong paperwork on three separate occasions.
Oh, wow. Oh, no. Yeah.
And I think that this one may run and run, because I think they're going to appeal for leniency from UEFA, because it would have gone through, but for somebody's bungling.
Is it like The Simpsons? Is it like The Simpsons, where I think Lisa Simpson sort of won a competition, and you know, but it was sponsored. She was like the prom queen or something, but it was sponsored by cigarettes, and she was campaigning against cigarettes, but she was disqualified because on the application form, under the bit written, "Do not write under this bit," Homer Simpson wrote, "Okay."
I just wonder, does it mean they've accidentally sent Christian Pulisic to PSG on loan? Or maybe there are a couple of squad players in Chelsea who, just unbeknownst to them, are now actually playing for PSG because they kept sending their documents.
It's every chance. Neil says, has Max asked Todd Bowley if he can buy him a new Subaru? Thank you, Neil. Jack Cancelo doesn't say anything. He didn't tweet us. He has gone to Bayern Munich, though, on loan till the end of the season, with view to a permanent deal worth up to £61.5 million. All seemed to happen very quickly, this, Robin. It seems a surprise. It doesn't feel very long ago that I was saying Cancelo's the best player in the league, or at least asking that question. I don't know what's happened.
Yeah, and I think that's been the general sort of Man City fans, a bit baffled by this one, although it seems that he's fallen out with Pep Guardiola over his playing time. And the biggest diss of all, he's blocked anyone affiliated with Manchester City on his Twitter.
Oh, good Lord.
So it's a clean break. Yeah, this is a tough breakup. I guess you don't cross Pep. No. I mean, I imagine they'll be okay without him, but I agree, he's a very, very good player. So, you know, it's an interesting one.
Hmm. He did post, "Once a citizen, always a citizen, thank you." And then what? Block, 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 block. I don't know. I'm really surprised by it, Barry, because City aren't playing brilliantly, and he's a really excellent player.
I think you have to conclude there's been some sort of irreconcilable differences. Isn't that what they say? Divorce papers. Because there's no other plausible explanation. Whether it's a row over playing time or a row over something else, I don't know, but he got the bum's rush anyway.
Well, that's been the suggestion in various outlets, one of them being The Athletic, that basically he was really cross about being left out of the team a couple of times, and his body language was really negative, and Guardiola got worried that he was spreading bad vibes, and so he decided to get him out of there. It is a risk. It's not a position where they have a ton of options, but of course the sort of Nathan Ake playing well. The emergence of Rico Lewis, who looks just extraordinarily good, means they have some players they can use. But yeah, risky move.
Spurs and the right wing backs. That's not a. It's not a band. Let's talk about Pedro Porro first. He's joined from Sporting, loan with an obligation to buy in the summer, expected to be around £45 million. It seems a long time ago since they had Kyle Walker and Kieran Trippier. It's been a difficult position for them, Lars. Is he the answer, Pedro Porro?
He's looked very good for Sporting whenever I've seen him. And looking at his sort of numbers, they look very promising as well. He's very attack-minded. Which I think suits, because one of the big problems Tottenham can have sometimes is, since they don't have a lot of creativity in central midfield, because Conte told them all to go away, the creative guys, that it's really important that you get something down the wings, go past people, put crosses in. And that's something Porro likes to do. He likes to get forward, puts a lot of crosses into the box. There's always the caveats about transitioning to the Premier League and getting used to football at this level in this league. I don't have like a magic ball in terms of knowing who will do that and who won't. But from what I've seen from him when he's played for Sporting, he looks like the right type of player, certainly, for what Tottenham need.
Jed Spencer's gone on loan to Rennes, so he was going to get playing time because all their right-backs are injured. He wants to do well at Spurs. Matt Doherty was quite interesting, Robin, wasn't it? Going to Atleti, and it was going to be on loan. I think Spurs, I think, realised that they'd had too many players. You're only allowed 8 players out on loan, and they just had forgotten that or something. So they terminated his contract, which is, I mean, it seems sort of feels ruthless, but also kind at the same time.
I guess so, yeah. No, that is an interesting one, because I remember I did the Spurs game when they came back after the World Cup break against Brentford, and Antonio Conte had played him in these sort of mid-season friendlies and he'd scored a lot. And yeah, I don't know what's going on there, because I think also Nottingham Forest fans are very upset with the way Jed Spence has been sort of cast aside, because he was excellent in the Championship last season. So, but it sounds like this is the player that Antonio Conte really wanted. Although, is Conte going to be there for much longer? It's, you know, he hasn't got a contract until further than the end of the season. So, tricky one.
Conte said Doherty played every game last season. Now I'm not seeing him in the right way to start the game. I'm not stupid. I don't want to lose. So, you know, good luck. But you know, Atleti, it's an interesting...
What a vote of confidence, that is.
Yeah, isn't it? It'd be fascinating to see how he does at Atleti. Yes, Baz?
I'm just, you described the cancellation of his, or termination of his contract as ruthless but kind. I mean, it's kind insofar as presumably Doherty gets the rest of his contract paid up and gets several million quid and maybe a signing on fee with Atleti. So I would say it's very kind. But I just wonder what would have happened if Doherty had signed his deal, or if that had gone through before Jed Spence deal at Rennes. Would they have cancelled Jed Spence's contract?
It's a good question.
Or would they have just kept him there rotting on the bench as they have all season?
I mean, no, because he's young, and even if Conte doesn't like him, maybe the next guy does. But whereas, I mean, with Doherty is 31, right? So there's realistically, you're not going to get a lot for him. So cancelling the contract, yeah, maybe you could have gotten someone to pay some million for him in the summer, but it's not... I guess the way you look at it is like an extra expense to bringing Porro in, right?
I think my favourite bit of Spurs business over this window is Brian Hill going on loan to Seville.
Yeah.
From whom they bought Brian Hill. Seville have done very well out of this. They've got 22 million quid.
They got Eric Lamella.
Eric Lamella. And now they've got Brian Hill back again. It's just not... I don't think anything sums up the absolute lunacy of the transfer window than that Brian Hill on loan to Seville move.
Quite a nice player. Man United have Marcel Sabitzer. You touched on this, Lars. Eriksen's injury at the hands of Andy Carroll, at worse than first feared, out for a few months potentially, which is a great shame, isn't it? Sabitzer has been flown in on loan from Bayern. Is this a good idea, Lars?
Yeah, well, he's different, Eriksen. Very different type of player. But I like him a lot. He's very energetic. Can play in a number of positions. Covers a lot of ground. Good sort of overall package of abilities. was very highly rated when he played for RB Leipzig, and then he moved to he went with Julian Nagelsmann to Bayern Munich, where he hasn't really been able to establish himself in the first team. But you know what? That's really hard at Bayern Munich if you're primarily a central midfielder, and they've got Kimmich and Goretzka there, who are not just very complimentary, they're also really good mates. Like, trying to dislodge one of them is very tricky. Last season, when Goretzka wasn't available, he struggled a little bit. This season, when he's played, he's actually looked kind of good. He's not as silky a passer as Eriksen is, but he brings them a lot of sort of running power. Plus, he's, you know, better than the other players who can bring them. You know, Fred also runs around a lot, you know, but I'd say Savitzer is a little bit better. I like this transfer for them, and I like the fact that they've looked at the Eriksen injury and thought, actually, we do need to do something here. And they've brought in someone who's of a very high standard. So, yeah, I like it.
I'm looking forward to a Nottingham Forest fan who's not paying a lot of attention this week, and Keylor Navas is a goal for them at the weekend. That's sort of the most batshit odd one for me. I mean, Felipe and Jonjo Shelvey into Forest as well. Peter says Leicester seem to have had a quietly excellent window. Christensen and Harry Suter look like solid additions for the project. Hashtag Brendan Im. Am I right, Barry?
All I know about Harry Suter is what I saw from him playing for Australia in the World Cup. He's obviously Scottish. I think he used to be at Hearts. And he went into the World Cup having played, I think, only one game since recovering from a cruciate injury. And he was absolutely immense. If he can carry that form, he's been brilliant for Stoke this season, I understand. I don't watch Stoke at all, so I don't know whether that's true or not. But if he can carry his World Cup form into Leicester, I would imagine he'd be a brilliant signing.
Oliver says, how much do you wish Bielsa had accepted the Everton job just to have seen him resign at 11 p.m. on transfer day? Marty says, is Ayew's proposed transfer the most Everton transfer they could make? They missed out on Paul Onuachu, went to Southampton, didn't he? He's a big lad. Andre Ayew, they're linked with, and Michy Batshuayi. They got no one.
The players they've missed out on, it's astonishing, the list. So there's Kevin Shad, Jorginho Rutter, Danny Ings, Aaron Andonjuma, Beto Bechanchal, Ishmila Sarr, that Sulemna fella that went to Southampton, Batshuayi, as you said, Thorgan Hazard, Conor Gallagher, Jean-Philippe Mateta. That's quite a list of targets to not get. And it just seems like players won't touch Everton with a 40-foot pole. And that speaks volumes about, you know, what the talk among players must be of what's going on at Everton, if so many of them. And then scratching around from Andre Ayew, like, crikey. And not getting it. What must Neil Maupay be thinking?
Onuachu, I am a little bit sad. I mean, interesting signing for Southampton. You say he's a big lad. I mean, he's 6'7". He's the biggest of lads. So I feel it's a little bit sad that the Onuachu Sean Dyche tie team up never happened. I feel like in terms of getting it launched, him and Calvert-Lewin up front there, you could launch anything at them. It'd be tremendous, but that hasn't happened. Maybe they've read all these articles about what a disciplinarian Sean Dyche is, because I've been kind of fascinated by this, the sort of... he had a thing at Burnley, like a wheel of fines for like minor disciplinary infractions, and it could be stuff like cash fines, the having to pay for dinner for the squad. Was something really weird about having to do a lap dance for someone in the team, that would be strange. But also one of the things with that, you risked spinning the wheel of fines and ending up having to go sit in the river next to the training ground. Which is one of those things. I'm sure some of the lads up at Burnley, like your Ben Mees and your James Tarkovskis and your Chris Woodses, were perfectly fine to go sit in the river. But I don't think all... I think there's quite a lot of professional footballers who, like, if you've forgotten to tidy up in the canteen, then you have to spin a wheel, and then in January in Lancashire have to go and sit in the river. They would be on the phone to the agent pretty fast after that and say, what on earth is happening?
Is the Mersey, like, do people swim in the Mersey? I mean, I know they get the ferry, obviously, but it does, yeah.
And also, Sean Dyche's war on headwear is a thing. Like, the ban on hats. He doesn't like people.
Tom Davis and Calvert-Lewin.
I'm really interested in how this is going to work. But also, has anyone seen Sean Dyche wear a hat? Because after reading this, I started Googling like Sean Dyche and hat. At some point, he must have worn a hat. All the sort of Google image returns, there's just him shaking hands with other managers who are wearing a hat. He himself seems to have a real problem with headwear. I'm hoping someone who on the Merseyside beat will ask him this in a press conference. What is your problem with hats? Because I know, like, I should probably end up, I've been talking for quite a long time. But Sean Dyche and the war on hats.
That's good.
Someone needs to get to the bottom of this.
What hat would be best for Sean?
Oh, Dyche? It's a. It's a Peaky Blinders hat, isn't it? It's one of those white pieces. In case Barry forgot that Iose Perez played for Leicester, it's all fine now. He's moved to Betis. So there we are. That's one for your notes. He's writing it down. That's excellent.
No, I was just going to ask Max if that's the conclusion of our transfer chat. Can you tell me now, with conviction, where Jan Bednarek is?
Oh, hang on. I saw he'd gone somewhere. Oh, no, he stayed where he is because I think his kids are at school or something like that, or his wife's about to give birth. Maybe that's Yannick Vestergaard. I mean, obviously, I don't know. So he's staying where he is.
He's been recalled from Aston Villa by Southampton. And that happened several days ago. So no, it might be Yannick Vestergaard who's putting his children's education first.
Do you know where Josh King is?
He's in Fenerbahce.
Oh, it was a quiz for Barry. But,
sorry.
No, that's,
I did not know that.
you get a point,
listen,
Lars. You get a point, Barry.
You should know this by now. If it's sort of a decent Premier League striker who scored some goals a few years ago who you haven't heard about for a while, they're always in Turkey. Always, Barry. Yeah. No exceptions to this. They always go to Turkey.
Yeah, but there's a lot of Turkish teams to choose from, and Talyaspor are in the mix now, aren't they?
Before we leave transfers, there are two things I feel like we should mention just very quick. I'll try to actually be quick this time. Bournemouth signing players, and Ilya Zabarny, Ukrainian center half, is 20 years old. He's one of these highly rated who I know bigger clubs have been looking at and liked for a while. Rocked up at Bournemouth. That's an interesting one for them. And I'd like to mention Southampton bringing in the giant Paul Onuachu, who is again. He's 6'7", guys. He is a big old unit from Genk. And also Kamaldeen Sulemana, who Barry briefly mentioned. Such an exciting winger. Used to play in Denmark for Nordsjælland through their Right to Dream Academy team up. They have this deal with an academy in Ghana. So you have a lot of really promising Ghanaian players who come up there. Kamaldeen, super exciting, fun winger. Dribbles a lot. Very dribbly guy. Very fast. If he can hit the ground running and sort of acclimatise to the Premier League, he should be a lot of fun for Southampton fans.
So he was a club record fee for Southampton, 22 million. That's their club record. So, just to put it in context of...
Sounds like a lot when I think Cambridge's is 260,000 for Steve Claridge in 1992. Anyway, that'll do for part two. Part three, we'll do some women's football, any other business. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. In the WSL, Robin, Man United rejected a world record bid from Arsenal for England striker Alicia Russo. A bid was understood to be more than £400,000 that Barcelona paid for Kira Walsh in September. Are you surprised at the amount? Are you surprised it was rejected?
Not surprised by either. Transfer fees have been going up. Beth England went to from Chelsea to Spurs for a record WSL fee. I'm not surprised that Manchester United rejected it. If they hadn't, it would have looked awful. It would have looked so bad for them. They're top of the league. They're in a title race. If they'd sold her to Arsenal politically...
Who have injury problems,
who
right?
Have you injury, know, that, like, you, Mead yeah. Amar Mead out for a long, long time. So it's not been a great window for them. They've recruited a couple of midfielders, but they really wanted another striker to fill that gap. But yeah, if Manchester United sold Russo to them, it just would have... It really would have told a story about, you know, how they how they view their women's team. They've taken a financial hit by not selling her because she's refused to sign a new contract and it's up in the summer. So she probably will go for free in the summer. But in terms of the sort of optics, they had to keep her.
So that's good. I mean, that is a good thing, isn't it, that they've done that. Elsewhere, the Women's World Cup, Visit Saudi, which is the Gulf Nations Tourist Board, is set to be unveiled as a sponsor of the World Cup in Australia and New Zealand. This month, Saudi Arabia's women's national team hosted and won a 14-friendly event in a bid to secure a FIFA women's ranking for the first time. A spokesperson for Football Australia said they were seeking clarification from FIFA. "We're disappointed that Football Australia were not consulted on this matter prior to any decision being made. Football Australia and New Zealand Football have jointly written to FIFA to urgently clarify the situation. Nikita White, an Amnesty Australia campaigner, criticised Saudi authorities' human rights record. It would be quite the irony for Saudi's tourism body to sponsor the largest celebration of women's sport in the world when you consider that as a woman in Saudi Arabia, you can't even have a job without the permission of your male guardian. The Saudi authorities have a horrendous record of human rights abuses, including cracking down on women's rights defenders." Those of you will remember the pod we did with Lina Al-Hathloul about her sister a few years ago. We'll echo that. "The campaign of so-called reform leader Mohammed bin Salman has been on is nothing more than a publicity stunt to try and diversify the economy. The Saudi authorities sponsoring the Women's World Cup would be a textbook case of sports washing." Robin, I mean, you'll probably be working on this tournament. I wonder how you feel about the Women's World Cup being sponsored by Visit Saudi. You obviously touched on Saudi in part one as well.
Yeah, I mean, not great. As you know, the tragic irony is not lost in terms of sponsoring a women's tournament. I think, you know, obviously you do give them, you know, a bit of credit for, you know, eventually they, you know, have got a women's team now. And as you mentioned, they held a tournament and won it. But, you know, in terms of life for women, you know, they have to ask permission, as you said, to their husbands for to do most things. So it's, yeah. And it not at all surprising that it's come from FIFA.
A number of legal changes have improved women's rights in Saudi Arabia in recent years. The end of the driving ban, amendments to oppressive guardianship law that would allow for the first time women to apply for official documents such as passports and to travel abroad independently. God, it's extraordinary, isn't it? The guardianship law has not been abolished, however. Women still need the consent of a man to get married, obtain certain forms of healthcare. Male guardians can also bring legal action against women for disobedience and being absent from home. The Guardian have contacted FIFA for comment. And from a BBC report yesterday, executions of prisoners have been carried out in Saudi Arabia with no advance warning to their families, relatives have told the BBC. The execution rate has almost doubled since 2015, according to a new human rights report, the year when King Salman and his son, Mohammed bin Salman, took charge. Changing tack quite a lot, Kev says, following your comment about Kara Matoma's dummy, even fooling the cameraman, "Are cameramen actually the greatest defensive minds on earth? When a drop shoulder fools Thiago Silva, we're totally nonplussed. But if it fools Steve on camera six, we lose our minds." It's a very good point you make. Simon says, currently watching Weymouth play in the Conference South. The home crowd are singing "Dirty Northern Bastards" to Hampton and Richmond. Can we class them as Northern? I think it's all entirely geographical.
From Weymouth, yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely, you can. Eric says, when was the last time you thought of Andreas Schürrle? Well, I sent these pictures round. I don't know if any of you saw them. He's now climbing up mountains with his shirt off, Barry.
Climbing up very cold, frozen mountains by the looks of things, with a rucksack on but no shirt. He looks like Captain Oates.
Was he topless, Captain Oates?
I don't know. Was Captain Oates topless? Seems to be naive at that time to try to get. This is the first person to get to the South Pole topless was Captain Oates.
I've no idea. He was delirious, so he may well have stripped off before leaving the tent.
Now he'd just be a Newcastle fan, wouldn't he? In the Gallagher, you know, shirt off. M says, "Ever think your car, Max, could end up the plot of some M Night Shalaman movie in the future, with of course being that there was in fact no Subaru and the Subaru in reality represents an ongoing existential crisis in Max's life. It's possible, you know, it has overwhelmed me at times in the last few days."
I can't imagine you ever having an existential crisis.
I think I'm too simple for it,
you know what you like, you're happy with your lot.
Yeah, I'll just have some peanut butter and it'll be all right, I guess. Yeah, there's no depth to me, so like, it can't be a crisis. Oh.
I'll have that on my wall. You know, live, laugh, love.
Yeah.
Just have some peanut butter and everything will be all right. Yeah. I'd like that on my wall.
Yeah, totally.
Max Rushton.
Christopher says, hi, Max, Barry and co. I wonder if you could give a mention to regular listener, occasional contributor and Dublin show attendee Aidan Kiran on the birth of his first child and future Republic of Ireland international John Dylan Kiran. Barry, would you like to wish Aidan, Mrs. Aidan and John all the best?
Yeah, absolutely. Big adventure for them. And I hope John Dylan does go on to represent the Republic of Ireland with distinction. And I hope there are no English ties there, that if he turns out to be really good, you bastards end up nicking it.
Also, big congrats to panellists of the pod and Women's Football Weekly as well, Anita Asante and Beth Fisher, who are expecting a baby. What a nice, happy family we all are, aren't we? Anyway, that'll do for today. Thank you, Lars.
Thank you, Max.
Thank you, Robin.
Thanks, Max.
Thank you, Barry.
Thank you.
Football Weekly was produced by Joel Grove. Our executive producer is Max Sarnas, and we'll be back tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.